Liveline on RTE Radio 1 with bonkers.ie, Ireland's favourite comparison and switching website. Visit bonkers.ie today and start saving on your household bills.
1850 715 815.
Hello, good afternoon, and you're very welcome to Liveline. Show at rt.ie, 1850 715 815 and 51551. Wash your hands. Tomorrow is Daffodil Day. We also hear that one in four of those infected with COVID-19 are health workers, healthcare workers, be it on the front line or indeed in other settings. Now, Susan, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Joe.
You're in a remarkable situation of selflessness. You're a cancer care nurse, Irish Cancer Society. So I'm very conscious of Daffodil Day tomorrow, and I'll explain how people can make donations later on. Your situation now, you're in lockdown with who?
Well, I am a Irish Cancer Society night nurse. That is my job, and that is what I do most of the time. Joe, thank you for having me on too. But I'm taking a little break from that at the moment because I'm actually here in the house of a dear friend who's and giving palliative care to her as she approaches the end of her life. Mm. So that's kind of what I'm doing at the moment, and I'm here with her and her family, which I'm deeply privileged to do. It's a very special time, and it is complicated, obviously, with the whole COVID virus situation, and just throws an enormous amount of extra anxiety and stress on a family that are grieving already, you know, and obviously my dear friend as well. It's particularly tricky, so we're all doing the best we can to support each other. Yeah.
So you've moved into the house, effectively?
Yes, I have, effectively, yeah. Yeah, I have. And
in other words, are you seeing your own family, or able to see them?
Not at the moment. Just, my friend is vulnerable, and I think we need to be all very careful of everybody vulnerable in our society. So I am minimising the risk of me seeing anybody else. So no, I'm not seeing my family at the moment. But that's okay. They're totally on board. Amazing supportive husband and daughter. They're totally on board and supportive of me being here. And, you know, we look forward to a time when we can see each other and the virus is gone and everybody's back out doing what they do, you know. So.
Yeah. But Susan, you're there as a friend, as you say, but you're also, you're working as a nurse, as a cancer care nurse as such, with your friend who unfortunately is very, very unwell.
Yes, well, I'm here in the capacity of as a friend.
Yeah.
Because that is something that we talked about last year together, and I said that I would help her out when the time came, and I'm very, very happy and privileged to do that.
Okay.
And I suppose being a palliative care nurse, and particularly with the Irish Cancer Society Night Nursing Service, I have the skills.
Yeah.
So I'm in the capacity here as her friend who's a nurse. I'm very glad and very happy to be able to help. But I do have the skills from, you know, the night nursing service.
Of course.
I've done that for quite a few years, and it's a wonderful service. And
this conversation you had with your friend, when did that take place? Where, I don't know, it came up anyway, that would you be with me, Susan, not just as a cancer care nurse, but as my friend when the time comes. How did that conversation unfold?
Well, my dear brother, who is a dear, dear friend of my friend who I'm minding here at the time, my dear brother passed away from cancer as a young man of 42,
only
16 months ago, 15 months ago, actually. And so I, again, took a break from working as a night nurse for the Irish Cancer Society and nursed him at home along with my dear sister-in-law, his wife, and the rest of my family, my siblings. Absolutely amazing. So it cropped up in conversation because my friend who I'm minding now is a dear friend of my brother. So, and it cropped up and the conversation around, you know, at my time would that be something that we could do? And I absolutely, totally, anyway, I can help. There's a lot of things I can't do, Joe. Many things I can't do, but this is something that I can do, and I'm deeply privileged to be asked and to honoured to be here with the family who are just amazing, the love and support, caring for my friend at home. It's not easy, Joe, but if somebody is, their wishes are to be at home at this time, it's to be able to pull out all the stops and help is amazing, and it is. It brings great comfort to the loved one and to the family to be able to do it. So to be able to support it in some way is amazing. And that is what the night nursing service essentially do as well, you know. So yes, that's how the conversation came up. And that's kind of... And then throw the COVID virus in on top. That's why I'm kind of here. And I'm very happy to be here. And
Little did anyone know what was
ahead of us.
And on the one hand, your friend, from what you're saying, knew that the day would come, unfortunately.
At some stage, yes. No.
Is your friend aware of the pandemic that's going on around us?
Oh, yes, absolutely. Yeah, okay. And I mean, and it's incredibly difficult. There's lots of many, many other people in this situation. I mean, at a time like this, you... want your loved ones around and your special people and your friends, and it's incredibly difficult, Joe. I mean, to be able to, you know, not be able to see your people and embrace them maybe like you would is incredibly difficult. To see your dear nieces and nephews and beautiful children that are so close to you through the window and not be able to hold them. Incredibly difficult to not be able to go out and see the sea and see the mountain. You know, the mountains, or maybe go and have lunch, family, you know, when
the
you
things
know
we took for granted.
Yes,
so
you know that we will be able to go and do it again, please God, in the future. But for people who are seriously ill, there's not always that chance that they will. So. It throws that whole different dimension on it as well. You know, the isolation and the physical distancing is particularly hard for grieving people in this situation. Yeah.
And you mentioned that you've moved into the house, so you're effectively in lockdown. But does that is your friend able to receive other visitors at this awful time?
Oh, absolutely, would have close family.
Yeah, okay.
Absolutely, close family are amazing, and they're very on board here with all the care. You know, absolutely, spot on with everything that my friend needs. They're right there with her. It's you know, friends and family outside the immediate circle would be the ones that would be social distancing.
I understand that.
Being very aware. But certainly, no, my friend's family are right here with her. Yeah, and very hands-on.
But Susan, you mentioned that it's a privilege. Now, some people would say the job you do is stressful rather than... Why?
It's a deeply intimate time, Joe. You know, you know, it's like the birth process, you know. I mean, a process, and at the other end of life, it's deeply intimate. And to witness that, to be able to make a difference in some small way, even to make it as comfortable and to support somebody and a family in such a difficult, intimate time, it is a privilege. It is. I don't do much per se, but just knowing that your presence makes a difference. It is a privilege. It's an honour, and it's a difficult. The night nursing is a difficult job, but it's also a beautiful job, because you might walk into a house full of anxiety and worry and stress and fear and symptoms. You know, your loved one might have symptoms, but to be able to leave the house 8 hours later, this is when I'm doing my night nursing, we're there from 11 p.m. to 7 a.m. to be able to leave the house a calmer, you know, more empowered, comforting place. That's great, a great job. You know, I get job satisfaction the whole time from doing really not doing that much. It's just your presence.
Well,
you know?
You're a qualified professional. Well, you can help with. Sorry, yeah. you can. You're qualified to administer medication and.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, you're a pod,
yes,
yeah, that's
absolutely,
you,
and so that's part of what we do. Yeah, is so control as well, very much so.
You're brilliant, but don't underestimate your brilliance and your skills, well, as well as your deep, deep humanity, which you obviously bring into the house and leave a lot of it in the house. And as you say, a house where someone is terminally ill, I cannot imagine the emotions, the fear, the anxiety that would be swirling around that household. And then to try and reassure somebody who knows that they're terminally ill, I could not find the words.
Well, and you know, you throw for the night nurses out there that are working at the moment, and of our so many tonight will go to patients' houses all around Ireland, and they're jobs are very humane, and they're very the human side of tapping in. You arrive at the door and you want to shake the family's hand. You can't do that anymore. You know, the grieving family around the bedside, you want to, that human touch is so important. You can't do that anymore. It's a massive impact on people not being able to, and the nurses not being able to, you know, embrace a family then if a loved one passes. And
yeah, because
it's very difficult.
Because the grieving process is going to be severely curtailed because of COVID-19.
This is it. And that reaching out, that human side of touch and embracing it, like it's just, we all need it, you know. It's very important. And you know, there's 180 nurses countrywide, you know, night nurses going in and out to people's homes and delivering this care on a nightly basis.
How long have you been doing it, Susan?
I've been doing it for coming up to 5 years. Okay. I have taken breaks because I did take a break to mind my
dear brother
at home with family, and I'm having a break now. So. I'm lucky. They're so supportive in me doing that.
Well, you're having a break, but you've moved in with your friend and are using your qualifications and your skills to help her. I don't know if it's him or her. But I wish them so well, and I wish you so much energy and strength, and the family as well, to stay. Stay with your loved one. It's your friend and their loved one. Because it is an extraordinarily difficult situation in terms of one, what is going to happen, and two, what will happen afterwards for the family, given the effect of this pandemic on people.
Thank you so much, Joe. Thank you very much. And I will pass it on.
And your brother...
was amazing, man.
And he set up a charity.
My brother, the whole country needs to Google my brother.
Okay.
Just a remarkable man. And I will say his name because everybody's comfortable with me saying his name here. Graham Jones, the Reverend Graham Jones.
Okay.
Remarkable man. Gave up a law career to set up a charity called Solace Project in the inner city of Dublin, particularly Dublin 8. Graham was a great humanitarian, visionary, encouraging person who was very much wanted to bring people from the outside in.
Yeah.
And marvelous, energetic leader. And he co-founded this Solace Project.
Yeah.
They started up in the Basin Lane there in Dublin.
Yeah,
with an after-school club for the children there to try and keep them in school. And then he set up a Liberty Saints rugby club to get some of the lads there. I mean, they didn't even have a green space to practice, but to get a rugby ball out and get the guys on board, he set up a rugby club, which is still going. And then Solace Project just grew from there into a, you know, he set up a Compass Prison program, which was very much a mentorship program for the lads coming out of prison, and used to bring rugby teams in there to play with the lads. And it grew into a large, and it still is. Solace Project is a vibrant charity in the inner city. I mean, doing immense work with teenagers and young people, and a wonderful legacy. And I mean, they're always, you know, in need of more. So I'm giving a little plug to them as well. So, but and then Graham did. When he felt his work was done there, he actually then went on to train in 2016 as a minister. And he was ordained as a minister just before he passed away. He had a very, very strong faith. So, a remarkable man. Left a great legacy and certainly left the world a better place. So,
and obviously, a family of his own and beautiful. Came from a great family, obviously.
Beautiful, yeah. Well, a family of five. We were great mum and dad. Wonderful upbringing, and Graham's wife and three children, just three beautiful girls. Beautiful, beautiful. So,
and condolences to them and to you. Stay with us, Susan.
Yeah, thank you, Joe.
Sister Anne Lynch has contacted us. Sister Anne, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Joe.
And you've contacted us. Why?
I contacted you to let you know that Sister Mary Rose Leeson, of Sisters of Charity of Jesus and Mary, died this morning. Yeah. And the reason I was ringing you is you interviewed her on her 100th birthday.
Ah, I remember it, yeah.
And you were so beautiful to her, and it gave her such a lift, and she was so excited. It gave her great encouragement, and she was able to tell everybody that hadn't heard it, and it was just wonderful that you took the time. You know, you gave her such time and care during that interview.
And she passed away this morning. So
she did, Joe, yes.
She would have been, 101?
She celebrated her 101 birthday last December.
And how long was she in convent life?
Well, the year before, she celebrated her Oak Jubilee, which is 80 years as a Sister of Charity of Jesus and Mary.
Isn't that incredible?
Yes, it was incredible indeed. But, you know, Joe, she lived every moment of her life. She said life was for living, and she did live it. There was no doubt about it to the very end. And I'm just so happy she died so peacefully in the care of her community and the carers in Rosslass who looked after her beautifully. And she said that to me only the other day.
Okay.
They're so good to me here. And that was great to hear that. But she was a wonderful lady, Joe, and I lived with her for a number of years in London.
Yeah.
And it was her, she just had a tremendous capacity to go out to people. It didn't matter who they were. And I used to sometimes take her in the car and drop her off at Wormwood Scrub Prison, where she would go in to meet the families of a lot of the young Irish men who were inside in prison. And the parents would be coming over brokenhearted. She would meet them with a caring hand and, you know, offer them support. And that's the kind of person. She always seemed to pick out the areas where people were heartbroken and needed that little bit of care and attention. She was a nurse, and she cared for people, older people in particular. There was something special about her because she always remembered the little detail. And it may not be a big thing, but it might be just she'd bring in a flower, or she would have a little picture, or she would have some kindness that would go beyond what her duty was. But it wouldn't be a big thing, but it would mean so much if somebody was feeling a bit low or a bit down.
And so Sister Mary Rose, who died this morning, was born in 1918.
Yes.
The year of the... That's the pandemic, the Spanish flu pandemic.
That's right, yes.
And she dies, and I know it's not through COVID-19, but that's my understanding. But she dies in the middle, and now in the middle of this pandemic.
I know.
And her obsequies will be limited, won't they? Because
very
of the
limited
pandemic.
Indeed, very limited. Thankfully, Father Liam Merrigan in the parish church has fitted his church with webcam, so. Because her family can't travel, and she has a cousin, Sister Elizabeth, over in England, and a nephew, Greg, and they can't travel, friend Helen, none of them can travel, and they will be able to follow her funeral mass on the webcam, and that's a tremendous comfort and consolation to everybody.
Yeah, I understand that. Have you been able to listen to Susan on the other line?
I was listening to her.
Remarkable woman, as is her dear friend, who unfortunately is terminally ill.
Yeah.
I think we have a clip now of Sister Mary Rose when she was on the programme.
All right.
Here she is. Yeah.
What's the recipe for a long life?
Yeah.
Live life to the full. Every day is a gift. So I said, dear God, today is mine. And if I can help somebody on the way, let me do it.
Today is an occasion.
What?
Today is an occasion. You're 100.
I am, yes.
And what did you do? What are you doing to celebrate?
What am I doing to celebrate?
Yeah.
A big party in the hotel in Athai,
Okay.
And we have a band and friend all around us, and we're dancing and we're singing and we're celebrating.
And do you hope to get up and dance later on?
Of course.
Well done. Strictly come dancing, eat your heart out.
Yes.
But you're having a party in a hotel. Have you got the centenarian's cheque from Morrison Uachtaráin?
No, I hope it's on the way, though, Joe.
And how much is it these days? Do you know? Have you checked it out?
I believe it's 2 now.
2,000?
Yeah.
Great. Have you plans?
Oh, I'll go on a holiday, Joe. Oh, go to Lourdes.
And is there longevity in your family, Mary Rose?
Well, yes. One sister lived to be 102.
Great.
Another sister lived to be 101.
Wow.
And an only brother, he was only 62.
That was Sister Mary Rose Gleason talking to me on the occasion of her 100th birthday, and that was December 2018, which is not too long ago, but it's a different world. As December 2019 was a different world. I want to stay with us, Susan, and Sister Anne, if you would, please. John Wall has contacted us on 1850 715 815. John, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Joe.
You're listening to Susan.
What a remarkable, remarkable lady. What she's doing, you know, at a time in her life when, I guess, she'd like to see her own family and friends, or at least, you know, spend a little bit of time with them under extraordinary difficult circumstances. She's given up that time so that her friend, you know, can live out her days in the best way that they can at the moment. I think over the last couple of weeks, I've thought of a lot of people, Joe, that are coming towards the end of their lives through illness. And it's, you know, everything they would have looked forward to, and over the next weeks and months ahead, as the days get longer and, you know, the weather gets better, everything has been taken away, absolutely everything. And we must think as much as we can and do what we can for people that find themselves, you know, at the end of their lives because of a terminal illness. And I cannot imagine the heartache for the families. We see pictures of you know, funerals that only very, very close family members can attend.
Yeah.
And it's very difficult. It can be very difficult to deal with a diagnosis. But to have to deal with this on top of that is extraordinarily difficult. And the people that give up their time from, you know, the Irish Cancer Society and the Mary Keating Foundation, etc., they're to be applauded at times like this. They do this voluntarily. And a lot of their resources, indeed, over the last few weeks have dried up. You know, the Irish Cancer Society were holding their Daffodil Day, and the Mary Keating Foundation as well. They're asking people to help. And I think we should consider whatever we can do for those voluntary organisations and the people in them that are doing so much for people that need it so badly now, more than any point in their lives they need it now, because it's a very dark place for some out there at the moment.
And what is your own situation, John?
My own situation is, we've talked before, Joe, I'm terminal, but I can look forward with a degree of certainty past the, you know, the immediate horizon. And my thoughts at this moment in time are for those that cannot, whether to be in hospital or whether to be at home. You know, when the time comes, I'd like to think that I would have family and friends. Well, I know I will. I'll spending quality time with the people that I love in my life, and vice versa. but that's been taken away. And that's the lifeline that so many people have. And at the moment, for most, they find themselves in that situation. At the latter stages, mm-hmm. it has been taken away. And, you know, we all know why, but, obviously it doesn't make it any easier. It's extraordinarily difficult for everybody involved. And, you know...
And because of COVID-19, John, are visits to you limited, or are you...
Non-existent, Joe. Non-existent. My family and I, that's yeah. it. Because I'm immunosuppressed, it's just not something that we can entertain. Yeah. And again, like everybody else, Joe, I find that extraordinarily difficult. I like people, I like talking to people and interacting with mm-hmm. people. But that's just, listen, it will come back. And okay. that's what we have to believe. And if we follow the mm-hmm. rules, we have hope. And, you know, together we'll get through this. But unfortunately, there are others that no matter what they do, because of their illness, they won't see it through. And it's those people that I think of mm-hmm. over the last few days and weeks.
But you also mentioned, John, mourners, that the yeah. as Sister Anne pointed out there about Sister Mary Rose, who died this morning because of COVID-19, everything is limited in terms of... by the way, I thought it was very generous, or very humane that you actually referred to mourners, given your own situation. But
we anyway. All like to say goodbye. I mean, I put myself in that position. I've buried friends of mine, and you know, the one thing that in the past I've treasured is the ability to say goodbye to somebody, and not just in person, but with their family. You know, throughout the we do death very well in this country, and unfortunately at the moment, because of everything that's happening, we cannot do what we want to do. It's inherent in our nature to say goodbye and to give someone a good send-off.
But John, I see on your call, you say, do you want to talk directly to Susan? Because it's Susan who prompted your call, isn't it?
Absolutely,
What would you like to say to Susan, who's a Cancer Society nurse, but at the moment she's obviously in a professional role, but at the moment she's moved in with a friend and her own family are obviously in a different location, but she moved in with her friend who is terminally ill, because she asked her when this was discovered, would she be with her as the time came? What would you like to say to Susan, John?
Susan, what you're doing is remarkable. I've never been as touched as I have been in recent years listening to your story and what you're doing for your friend. You're giving your friend the gift of life at a time when you would least expect it, given the circumstances. And it's extraordinary. It must be difficult for you, but words actually fail me. Mm-hmm. It's you know, we hear of the frontline staff, etc., etc., and then there's people like yourself that you know, obviously, the person that you're dealing with. It's your dear friend, and you're saying goodbye on behalf of so many people in your friend's life. You are that point of contact, and there's you know, how you're managing to deal with what you're doing and how you're doing it, I do not know where you find the inner strength, but I am certainly from the way you're talking, Susan, that your friend will treasure this moment, you know, forever, wherever she goes after this life. That's something that she will treasure for the rest of her days, as I'm sure you and your friend's family will treasure as well. It's extraordinary.
Okay, well,
thank you so much, John. That's so lovely words. Thank you so much. And you know, it's just, thank you. I'm very touched. And I have to say, my friend is a remarkable person as well, despite all these difficulties and, you know, throwing the COVID virus restrictions. She's remarkable and she's very upbeat. She has a great faith and she's living the best life she possibly can be under the circumstances. She's remarkable. She's very easy to look after. A remarkable woman, and as I say, I'm very glad I can help. But thank you, John. Thank you so much, John, and it's just so nice of you to ring up and tell your story too. And you know, I wish you all the very, very best too. You know,
thank you.
Really, thank you. Thank you very, very much.
Okay, Susan, go safely, and
thank you,
go well to you and your family, and indeed your friend and their extended family as well at this difficult time. John Wall, go safely as well, John. Keep that voice.
And you keep yours, Joe. Thanks for everything all the media are doing at the moment.
Yeah, you'll always have a platform with this programme. You know that. Sister Anne Lynch, God rest Sister Mary Rose. What are, I know people can't go to the funeral, but what are the funeral arrangements, Sister
our
Anne?
Our funeral mass will be at 11 o'clock in the parish church in Monastreven, Saturday morning.
Saturday, and you say that will be webcammed?
That'll be webcammed, yes.
But unfortunately, our own family can't attend.
No.
Okay.
Very hard.
She was. I'm listening back earlier to other bits of it. She said on the day I asked her about life lessons and secrets. She said life is for living and reaching out to people. Now, even that phrase, reaching out to people, we can't even do at the moment physically, but we can do it across a street. We can do it across, once there's distance, we can do it across the airways. We can do it across the phone or whatever. But
that's
life
right.
is for living and reaching out to people, and that was. Sister Mary Rose, when she was on, do you recall? Did she ask for a piece of music? Because she's from Clare.
Well, she was from Clare, yeah. And she moved to Kerry, to Dua in Kerry, when she was 6 or 7. So she claimed Kerry, but she now and again would claim Clare and say when. And the song she claimed was "The Lovely Rose of Clare."
Okay. Well, it seems apt after what Susan has been saying about her dear, dear friend in this difficult
yes,
time,
indeed,
what John
indeed.
Has been saying about his own life at this time and the situation he's in, and what you were saying about Sister Mary Rose, that we should have a piece of music. So let's reflect for the next couple of minutes on this piece of music, and then I will give out the details of Daffodil Day. God rest Sister Mary Rose Gleeson. Condolences to all. Her sorority and the other members of the family, and may she rest in peace. John Wall, mind yourself. Susan, likewise, and dear.
And thank you very much, Joe. Thank you.
And warm embraces, Susan, to your friend.
Out like a jewel on the lovely hills of Clare, where I strolled around with my sweet love. One evening at the fair, her eyes shone like silver streams with her long golden hair. I won the heart of a young sweet lass, my lovely Rose of Clare.
Talk to Joe on 1850-715-815.
Let's go straight to people who are on the front line. Matt O'Toole is a GP. You would have seen him on with Claire and Sarah earlier on in the week. Matt, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Joe. How are you?
Good. You're a GP in Renle, as I say. But unfortunately, COVID-19 has visited your family.
Yeah, so my sister is a nurse in France, Joe, and she was diagnosed with COVID-19 yesterday. Now, she's young, she will be fine, but okay. I think what it has kind of done for us really is kind of highlighted the importance of PPE. So she's, as I said, a nurse in France.
Personal protection equipment, yeah.
Personal protective equipment, so, you know, gloves, masks, gowns, face visors. She was essentially working in France, and at the moment there's a huge shortage of personal protective equipment in France. And unfortunately, where she was in France, they were basically given one mask per day, and things like gowns and masks were rationed. So what she describes, I mean, she has now been diagnosed with COVID-19, but there's a huge number of healthcare workers in France that are now being diagnosed with COVID-19. Now, we know in Ireland, you know, 25% of all positive cases are healthcare workers. So I suppose what we're trying to do and what we're aiming to do is to plead with people. If there are people out there that might work in the pharma industry or the food industry that have PPE, you know, this is a critical time for us in healthcare, and it would be great if they could donate that to frontline health services.
And what might people have or businesses have? I know hairdressers were asked and pharmacies that have any spare, but what might people have, Matt, that would be useful?
Yeah, so I suppose PPE gowns, so people who would work, for example, or industries, the pharma industry and the food industries in particular, would have large stocks of these. So they're basically disposable gowns that we put over our scrubs or our clothes to protect our clothes. Surgical masks, or specifically there's two kinds of masks, so FFP2 and FFP3 masks. So people that work in those industries will know what they are. And simple things like basically goggles and gloves.
Yeah.
The disposable gloves.
Disposable gloves, okay. And where can people send them or donate them?
Yeah, so I suppose, I mean, there's a kind of a group that I'm working with at the moment. So what I might do is if anyone, you know, would like to discuss that further or donate equipment, what I might do is I might get them to contact you guys, and I'll give you guys the contact details. Okay. And we'll then get in contact with them.
And it's best if they just send it in an email. We don't have the staff on site, unfortunately, to answer calls. So
no email, yeah.
Yeah, joe@rt.ie, and we just forward the email to your private address then. Not
yeah,
the best way,
exactly.
Yes. Instead of you having to give it out on air. I understand that, Matt. You're up to your eyes. How are you managing, Matt? How's your practice?
Yeah, well, I mean, look, these are extraordinary times. I mean, you know, the way that we're working as GPs has totally changed in the last 2 weeks. So we're trying to do, you know, 90% of our work now through telemedicine or over the phone. So it's been a huge change in the way that I work as a GP. But like, you know, everyone on the front line is putting their shoulder to the wheel. This is only the beginning, you know. We're in this for the long haul. And as we've said multiple times, this is just the start of the surge. We're certainly under huge pressure, but everyone at the front line is under pressure at the moment.
Indeed, and I know there's it's been growing, but there is a campaign for people to stand outside their house within distance, of course, and just applaud this evening at 8 o'clock. It's an act of solidarity more than applause, but an act of applause is the way we communicate appreciation. So, Matt, have you been talking to your sister? How is she doing? Is she okay? Or
Look, as I said, She's young. So she will be fine. But I mean, I think in terms of the applauding healthcare workers, I mean, look, healthcare workers are obviously doing stellar work at the moment. But the reality is that the way that this kind of will pan out in terms of the COVID pandemic really won't depend on what we as healthcare workers do. Yeah. It'll depend on what every man, woman, and child in the country does, which is the two things which I know you're constantly reiterating is social or physical distancing, washing your hands, and self-isolating if you become unwell. They're really the three critical important things that will determine how this whole thing pans out, you know. So I know people are hearing about it all the time, but it is so important, you know.
Still, it really is. Okay, Dr. Mahotul, Matt, I hope your sister recovers quickly and fully, as you said, as given her age group, and she will. And kind regards to you and your work. Let me go to someone else who's connected to the front line that has contacted us on 51551 Wash Your Hands, Sheila McCann in Mullingar. Sheila.
Hi, Joe. How are you?
Good, thanks. How are you? Because you're connected directly with the front line.
I am. I'm a bit nervous, so don't let me go off on a rant.
No, take your time.
My point really is, and why I wanted to talk to you, is I'm asking that the government and HSE provide alternative accommodation for people working in the front line so they don't have the added stress of coming home and potentially infecting their families.
Okay.
Like, everybody's going on, as in the government, about these are all heroes. Well, why not treat them like heroes? You shouldn't have to sanitise your husband in a shed before he comes in.
Your husband is in the ambulance service.
What do you do when
he comes home?
Well, we basically strip him down out in the shed and put on a wash of clothes and wash him down and have a bucket of soapy water and wash his hands and anything that's been touched by anybody. He's out there all day, every day, like so many others. And it's not even just him. It's everybody from the cleaning crew to the consultants. But, you know, the stress of him trying to come home to children and come into the house and make sure he's cleaned properly and then eating in the house. Like, with all the accommodation and hotels closed at the moment, could the government not put them up that they'd have somewhere to wash and eat and sleep? Because the stress of contaminating your loved ones is huge. It's cheaper to put him up in a hotel for a month than to put me in ICU for a month.
That's a very good point. And is he willing to do that, Sheila?
Obviously, he doesn't want to, Joe, but at this stage, look, we're a month into this nearly, from the HSE staff point of view. It's absolutely exhausting. They go into work, nobody knows what you're going to deal with in any given day. And then you're trying to come home and, you know, not be stressed in front of the children and be anxious yourself, but then trying to clean everything. And, you know, he takes a lot of his stuff off in the car. His shoes stay in the car, for example, and his heavy jackets and his work bag. So his car has kind of become a bit of a changing, bit of a Superman kind of thing going on there. it's just very unfair.
And how is he humour-wise and mentally, probably when he comes in from work in the ambulance service?
Well, I work as a psychotherapist, so I manage my stress and then I manage his stress and then we manage the four kids. It's stressful. Mm. It's stressful for everybody.
And now, I know Dalata, who are a great hotel group, they always were. I have no connection with them whatsoever, but any time I heard their chairman, who was on radio a fair bit when they're announcing results, I think they have about 42 hotels. But I saw a piece or statement from Dalata, who are an Irish group, this morning, saying that they are looking at the prospect of that their hotels will be occupied, and not for money, by the way, will be occupied by frontline workers.
But this is happening now. It's the government kind of being reactive rather than proactive. How many of the families of these healthcare workers have to get really sick before somebody actually does something? We have a huge army barracks here in Mullingar. It's sitting there empty. It's 2 minutes walk from the hospital. It's not actually even a living space you're looking for. It's somewhere to clean and eat that you could then come home and visit your family for a couple of hours, but stay away from them. If my husband has to self-isolate, where is he going to go? Because our house isn't that big.
Okay, but as I say, Dalata have made that offer. I'm sure other hotel groups would add to it as well. And they actually, I think it was the chairman who said, Pat McCann, isn't it? Pat McCann, who's always been on, he's a great, I've never met the man in my life, but he comes across extraordinarily well. Now, he said, this is not about money, this is about survival. And he said, he actually, I think he added, if I'm remembering correctly, I read it earlier this morning, he added that he said to businesses and companies, do not get obsessed with the bottom line. Do not get obsessed, because you'll make yourself even more fed up and down if you're worried about all the money that's not coming in. He said, just worry about surviving and keeping going at this time and helping others. So kind regards to your partner.
Thanks,
Sheila, and indeed your situation. Let me bring in Sandra. Sandra, good afternoon. What's your situation, Sandra?
Hello, Joe. Lovely to talk to you.
Likewise. Yeah, go ahead.
Very similar to the previous talker. Mm-hmm. I live in Navan, and my daughter and her husband live with us trying to save for a mortgage, right? She doesn't drive, so he has to take her every morning up to hospital in the south side. Mm-hmm. And go then back and pick her up. He can work from home on his computer, but she has to go into work.
So that's four trips a day he's to make.
That's right.
Drop, go back home, collect, go back home.
That's right.
How many kilometres is that?
It's a fair few.
It's a couple of hundred, obviously.
Yes, it's. I did say to him, how much is it? It's about 70 or 80 quid in petrol.
Yeah. What can be done to help?
Right. Mm-hmm. Similar to the previous caller.
Sheila, yeah, and her husband, yeah.
Yeah. Right. I was thinking, because nurses are falling off the cliff physically and mentally, we need to let them know we hear them. We're here for them too. I'm also a nurse, so I have some idea of what I'm talking. There is safety and sameness, but that's all skew-whiff. It's all gone by the board. The problem-solving skills, while they're standing up on a 12-hour shift, they're almost going into robotic mode.
Yeah. And Sandra, would you agree with Sheila saying at our hotels that would help out?
Totally. Because if we don't put it out there, it will never happen.
For frontline staff, okay.
For frontline staff.
During the emergency,
Myself, I'm retired, and my husband is retired. And while my daughter is coming back and forth every day, should we hit the red button where one of us is positive, we don't know what to do.
Yeah.
We have no plan in place. So I was thinking that if there is some genius, very humble person with the skills of, like, Susan that you had on earlier, remarkable. She's an ambassador for nursing. that they would turn around and say, right, this it's on full tilt now. We've got to do something for them. There's plenty of empty rooms.
Yeah, it's just the logistics of it that have to be organised. Yes. But we've lots of, as we're discovering, and every country is, in fairness, there are lots of really, really, really smart people around who have come to the fore in this, and smart, humane people, including yourself, Sandra, and Sheila, and Susan, and John Wall, and Sister Anne, and the late Sister Mary Rose. Okay, we'll put it out there, but that's two people independently related to frontline healthcare staff saying, is there any way that hotels near their location, can we make it easier for them? Yeah, and their relatives.
Could I mention even a caravan park site for staff?
Yeah, but the government have closed caravan parks.
Or even that Central Parks place.
Yeah, which is incredible. Yeah, but is that near enough to hospitals? That's the problem.
Well,
you know, Centre Parks is now the biggest employer in Longford, isn't it?
Yeah.
Anyway, no, I know we're all looking for ideas. I take that on board, Sandra. And best wishes to your daughter, and safe travelling to all. Let me see, Anna O'Sullivan, before the break. Same, your daughter's a doctor. What's happened, Anne?
Well, she's moved out of the house to protect us.
Okay.
So she's moved into a house paying rent there. But, I mean, she's, like all of them there, they're very dedicated. They're only caring for their patients. But it's a...
And what do you think of Sheila and indeed Sandra's idea that hotels might make their rooms, their ensuite rooms available?
Well, if I could just say, Joe, I think the healthcare staff have received enormous support, I know. My daughter, if she goes into a garage to get a coffee, they won't charge if she's in her scrubs. But I was just saying to your researcher there that I was very concerned about the incidents in Dungarvan and Dunleary and Simon Harris.
You also wonder,
are they a target? You know, because they're wearing scrubs
all the time.
They're not. They have to. I hope they're not.
Good God, no. There were three incidents by stupid people.
Yeah.
It seems like they were in groups, and you know how people get in groups of lunacy. But I can't imagine we'd be seeing any more of that nonsense.
I really hope not, because they're
and
very vulnerable.
She moved in. Is there a hotel near where she's based at the minute? The doctor.
I suppose there would be.
Would be, yeah.
She's in Dublin, so I suppose there would be. You know, numerous of these. Kind of city hotels around the place.
Okay.
But I think there are a lot of doctors and nurses and frontline staff that are doing this because they're just too worried about bringing the virus home.
Okay, well, there's
also, if I could just add one thing while I have you there, if there was any support they could have with transport as well. Now, I know that's a difficult one, but also they don't want to use public transport.
Yeah, of course,
they don't want to pass it on. But I know everybody's doing an incredible job.
And Anne, how's your family managing generally?
Oh, we're fine. We're fine.
Yeah.
We just want them to be well, you know.
Are they all in Ireland?
No, I have another daughter, a doctor in New York, so she's similar situation.
And New York is the epicentre of it now, apparently.
It is, unfortunately. It is.
Thousands of new cases.
We are very concerned. We're hugely proud of them, but very worried, and I know it's a huge effort by everybody and by yourselves there in RTÉ as well.
Thank you so kindly, but let the message go out. The frontline staff, some of them at least, are looking for would consider the option of moving into a hotel nearer where they're based. Okay, Sheila McCann, Sandra, Anna O'Sullivan, thank you indeed. Joe at RTÉ.ie, 51551, wash your hands.
Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815.
Getting a great deal doesn't need to be a big deal. If you're renewing your car insurance in the next month, Liberty Insurance are offering up to 20% off when you quote and buy online at libertyinsurance.ie. No hassle. Just a great quote. But be quick, offer ends Friday. Liberty Insurance, ready for the real world. Online discount up to 20% applies to new private car policies only. Maximum discount €300, subject to minimum premium applied before optional covers. Offer valid 23rd to 27th of March 2020. Acceptance criteria, terms and conditions apply. Liberty Seguros, Compañía de Seguros, Araya Seguros, SAA, trading as Liberty Insurance, is authorised by the General Director of Insurance and Pension Funds in Spain and is regulated by the Central Bank of Ireland for conduct of business rules.
Calling all night owls. Cathal Murray here, inviting you to join me for some escapism through music. Turn on and switch off to Late Date. Sunday to Thursday nights from 11 on RTE Radio 1.
Liveline on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by bonkers.ie. Compare energy prices across a range of suppliers this March. See how much time and money you could save with bonkers.ie.
Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815.
And Joe at RTE.ie. Anne, you've spotted what you believe is an anomaly in the COVID-19 payment.
Yeah.
Go ahead. Please.
I was just looking into it because my husband got an email from his employer just saying he's probably going to get temporarily laid off. So mm-hmm. it was just something I thought maybe start looking into it now. I don't work. I have a young child, so we're married, so we're a family of four.
Okay.
The emergency payment doesn't stand to him because he has dependents. He has to go for job seeker's allowance.
Okay.
Job seeker's allowance is worth €391 for a family of four.
Okay, yeah.
sorry. My niece works one day a week. She's just a student. Yeah. Her average weekly income is about €120. She is on the €350 emergency payment.
Oh, is she?
Yeah. Along with a lot of others. And I just don't understand how that justifies...
And you're sure your niece is going to get 350?
Well, she got 205 on Tuesday.
Which was the initial, yeah, and it's changing.
Which was the initial,
from tomorrow,
so I presume
yeah.
it's going to go up like everyone else's, as did a couple of our friends and a couple of my friends, nieces and nephews. So, I've looked into it and I have heard people come back. You see, I'm not saying don't pay people. Mm-hmm. Give them maybe their wages, what they're missing. I just don't understand how you can overpay someone in a crisis and then underpay someone in my situation. You're hearing them talk about nurses going back to work and not getting paid for it. I don't understand.
The student nurse that we had a lot of them on the other day.
Yeah. I don't understand the thought process behind it.
It does apply, you're right, to part-time workers. You're right.
Yeah. And also applies to part-time workers who might be in receipt of other social welfare payments.
Now, Regina Doherty, the minister, did say that there might be some moral hazard involved because... And I think this might be the situation. Now, I know moral hazard is different to the situation. Moral hazard where someone deliberately makes a decision to go one way in the interest of getting or avoiding payment, but where they don't have to.
So your
job seeker's payment would be 391. What's that comprised of, Anne?
Well, when you actually go onto the gov.ie website, it gives you the breakdown. So the person making the application, which would be my husband, he gets 205.
Okay.
136 for an adult dependent.
Yeah, yeah.
€40 for the first child, €18 for every child after that.
Okay, that brings it up to, yeah.
I don't understand why him, if he loses his job temporarily to COVID-19, why isn't he able to go in and get his first standard as the applicant at the 350 rate.
And then the
136, so on. Would that not help families in my situation?
That's a good point. And stay there
because they did increase it from 205 to 350 for a single person. So I don't understand how a student is given €350 to live on weekly and a family of four is expected to live on 390.
Let me bring in David in the west of Ireland. 51551, wash your hands. David, good afternoon.
Hi, good afternoon, Joe.
You spoke loud and clear. You spotted something as well, an anomaly in the COVID-19 pandemic unemployment payment. Go ahead, David.
Yeah, so I just happened to be looking through. Maybe I should clarify the intro by just saying I am self-employed.
Mm-hmm.
I have a company which provides consultancy services on the CE marking for companies.
Okay.
So all of that would entail visits, on-site visits to the various different premises. But what I caught today was that because I'm actually the same as everybody else, I'm just trying to work from home. It's difficult. Like I said, for a lot of things, you need to be on-site. But as I looked up the matter with regards to the self-employed earnings, I just noticed that it says going through a myriad of information, the assistance is only for those people who are aged from 18 to 66. So all those people out there who are over 66 and self-employed get no assistance whatsoever. Now, I'm not sure...
But do they say you're entitled to the... I know that... Well, the changes, but...
Each area where you actually see, you know, looking for assistance, it is not the first area in terms of what I call ageism now. It's 18 to 66. So they've made a cut-off point at an age of 66. So once you're over 66, there's nothing. Now, I'm presuming that the reason for that is that they might turn around and say, well, you know, you get a pension if you're... Yeah, plus, but that's all taxed as well. That, you know, if you're a limited company, and even though you're a sole trader in one sense, you know, all of your earnings is taxed. So it's you know, you can't just turn around and say, well, there's something actually coming in. At the end of the day, that is taxed to the full. What I feel is wrong is more important is that there are people out there who have businesses. They're 66 plus. And what's actually they love what they do. They love going to work, etc. But right now, the problem is that for somebody like me, I won't see any change. I can't see any change till somewhere around June or July, because the companies that have actually cut back because of it, if those projects start again, even at the beginning of the end of April, early May. By the time then that the work goes into that, you're probably looking at somewhere around June, July. So between now and June and July.
So on the one hand, one of the reasons the government said they were raising the pension age and raising it significantly over the next number of years, it's already been raised up to 68, 69, I think. One of the reasons they said is that people are working longer. And they want people to work longer because... And then on the other hand, they're saying this emergency payment, they don't recognise anyone over 66 as working.
No, it's and this is why one of the feelings I have about that as well is that on that particular issue, I actually think that it's very important that people can work as long as they can, just for mental health. I mean, you can't... There's only so many days in the week you can go and play in golf or you go sailing. After that, you know, if it's bad, you've got to sit in. But most people, even at that age, would have, they're still paying taxation on income, first of all. I pay PRSI, I pay VAT on the services.
Okay, of course,
I'm taxed fully to as much as they can take off me. But now they're saying, you know, guess what? And by the way, that makes me not a burden on the state, but an actual contributor to the state. And once you're... The other side of it is that, you know, once you have something that you can do that tests the mind, etc., you find that people are living a more healthier life. So I can't understand why, if people are contributing in a way that helps the economy, not so big, by the way, don't get me wrong, but you get my point.
It's
terrible.
Okay, it's an emergency payment that was introduced at great speed, and there's another anomaly being pointed out. Okay, David, thanks indeed. And Anne, thank you also. Joe at rt.ie, 51551, more chance.
Joe Duffy!
Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815.
Another unusual one. As you know, the government shut down caravan parks, or mobile home parks, as they're known as. And some of them are high end. You pay the price of a house to get onto them and to live in them, and have golf courses and swimming pools. But Pat O'Regan, Pat, what's your situation?
Yeah, I'm in a mobile home park situation in Wexford.
Yeah.
And there's not many people in the park, there's not many people in the area. But now, on account of the new regulations, the government have actually closed all mobile park homes in a blanket legislate. And I'm compelled now to go back to Dublin, where I'm going to be living in a high density population. I do suffer from rheumatoid arthritis, and I'm on high drugs that are my immune system. So I'm going to be a candidate for picking this COVID disease barriers up. So I just has anybody?
And is there many people, Pat O'Regan, on your site at the minute?
No, there's not. There's only about eight people.
And how are you managing?
Oh, well, we're just managing.
The weather's picking up, isn't it?
Well, yeah, but it's been very cold. Once this virus got into Ireland, I packed up and moved down to Wexford. And we did our shopping there 2 weeks ago. And, we're running short of supplies, but my wife would have to go up and do some more shopping. We're just staying self-confined, cocooned. And we haven't seen anybody, except you say hello to somebody on the road when you're walking by, but you're on either side of the road.
But are you near the sea? You're getting more fresh air?
You're getting more fresh air, you're getting out.
Less human contact.
Less human contact, but now I've been forced to go back into the city, and
there is more detail, but did the government say anyone who's in a caravan or a mobile home park can stay there?
They said all mobile parks are closed.
And how can they police that?
They just tell the owners to close up and get all the residents.
And as your owner, I don't know what way it works, but as your owner said, you've got to get out. They have.
You have, yeah.
And you have to get out by when, Pat?
Well, tonight. The last night, he's after giving me a bit more time because it takes a while now because I packed in for the whole summer, until this thing is over. I now had to get out. And I'm down here, the weather's nice now, but it hasn't been nice for the last couple of weeks. And you're just in a mobile home. Well, I thought it'd be safer down here than up in Dublin.
I think a lot of... Now, one argument put forward, I know it was the argument put forward on Achill Island, of all places, where apparently some people did go to their holiday homes. One of the arguments put forward by some locals who opposed it said that you will put a strain on the rural medical service if, God forbid, you got COVID-19.
Well, if I got COVID-19, I'd have to go home and it would just be an hour and a half up the road.
Yeah.
So, the way of, I'm cheating. I don't understand how I can actually catch it down here because, as I said, I'm very confined and very careful. I haven't been at the shops or outside anything at all in the last 3 weeks.
That was one of the worries that the government had in closing mobile home sites, and that all the children are off school. People who have mobile homes normally go down over Easter. That's the start of this season, isn't it? But that in the current situation, everyone with their children would decamp to their mobile home site and start playing with each other, naturally, and that might be a risk.
That is possible, but while stopping them, they're probably doing that up in Dublin anyhow. So you just have to abide by the same rules that you have down here.
Well, I just wonder, is there any way of saying adults only in mobile home sites?
Well, there is, yeah. If you just curtail it, but you just have to close and everything. And then our mobile park doesn't even have a playground or anything like that.
Okay.
There's no facilities, sharing facilities. You're just locked up in your mobile. I don't mind that. So I'm prepared to last it out.
Yeah, a lot of people love that life. That's cosy and comfortable, especially if you're in a nice area and you're near the beach or the sea or nice walks. If you're near the beach or the sea and near nice walks, it's where people want to be.
And
hopefully the weather will pick up and the clocks are changing. The days are going to be longer from next weekend, I think. But anyway, okay, Pat, your plea is there. Maybe
I'm very apprehensive about to say going on. And then I don't know what's the government will do for me if I get sick. I've heard those reports that they're not looking after the old people, that they're giving all the ventilators to the young people.
Well, we haven't got to that stage yet. Don't
I know, yeah.
Pat O'Regan, Pat, thanks indeed. You've made that case very strongly for at least adults being allowed to go.
And everybody used common sense.
And that would be easily policed. You can easily, I presume, anyone 18 or over. Yeah. Okay, thanks indeed, Pat O'Regan, for pointing that. You mind yourself, Pat.
Okay, thank you.
Stay well. 51551, wash hands. Joe Duffy.
Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815.
And Joe at rt.ie. Kay is in Clondalkin in Dublin. Kay, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Joe. How are you?
And how are you?
Thanks for having me on your show.
Yeah, thanks for the contact. You're 85,
fine.
As you say in your call there. I'm 85, you only leave the house for your meds. So how are you managing?
Well, I have plenty of food in and a freezer full of food. I'm sure when I use all that up, I go shopping.
You go shopping and you maintain your social distance. And what about your social life?
Well, I must say that we have a little shop at the top of our road.
Right.
And I can phone up and get my paper every day and anything else I want, milk or bread, which would be the most necessary things. And they deliver to my door. Very good. Laura,
okay. And what is the Villagers Club you're telling me about in your text?
Well, the Villagers Club is a club of mostly ladies. And we meet every Tuesday morning and we do all sorts of things. We have a thought for the day, and then we have maybe a chat and have a cup of tea, and then we would have maybe bingo sometimes, or
okay,
quizzes and
online. Okay, and I know you play bridge. Can you play bridge online?
You can play bridge online, yes, but I don't play bridge online.
Okay,
I prefer to have the company.
Of course, that's,
you know, it's the company you miss.
You're playing partner.
At a time
and
like
how often would you have been playing bridge, Kay?
Oh, I play about 5 times a week.
Wow.
Yeah. And we have some lovely clubs and lovely members. And
okay.
It's
yeah,
a great
and,
game.
And you have a tip about WhatsApp.
Oh, yeah, we got into WhatsApp since this virus thing came on. And we have put the phone on that, and we have quizzes and exercises and chats and all that sort of stuff.
So get on, if you have a mobile, and get on WhatsApp.
Yes, great.
That helps. And how are your family managing, Kay?
Well, I don't have a family at the moment. I had one child and he was killed.
Oh, God.
And his wife is alive and my 2 grandchildren.
And what happened to him, Kay?
He was knocked down by a drunken driver.
Oh, my God.
He was walking home. He wouldn't drink and drive, and he was walking home and was killed.
And what age was he?
He was 35.
Oh, so young.
Yeah, young man.
I'm going back to the start of the programme, and Susan talking about her brother, Graeme Jones,
yes,
who was a young man as well, who died, unfortunately, of cancer. I'm sorry to hear that.
Ah, it is.
And have you grandchildren, Kay?
I have 2 grandchildren,
oh, okay.
A boy and a girl, yeah.
Okay.
So
I'm sure they're missing their granny at the moment, but I hope you're WhatsApping them, and I hope all the WhatsApp jokes that are on, I hope they're sending them some to their granny.
Mind yourself,
who do you want to say hello to, Kay? Well, I have you there. Who would you like to say hello to? All your bridge buddies?
All my bridge people.
Yeah.
Like, there's hundreds of them. And they're all missing the bridge. And, of course, they're all missing the Villagers Club as well.
Okay. Well, hopefully you'll get back
to
them.
I hope they'll get over this.
Yeah.
And I hope I'll get over it as well.
You will. Of course you will.
But, it's a great outlet to bridge.
Okay.
Absolutely.
And Kay, condolences on the passing of your son and such.
Thank you, Joe.
Mind yourself, Kay. That's Kay.
Get on with life.
Yeah, absolutely. We're a lot of people are learning that now, unfortunately.
And I hope some tragically cure can be found for this.
Okay, here.
Thanks.
Okay, thanks, Kay.
Thanks,
mind yourself, you and your friends.
Nice talking to you.
Likewise. Privilege talking to people, I can tell you. Paddy Carney was on sound. Broadcast coordinator was Doc Martin. The show today was produced by the series producer, Rebecca Meehan. Ray Darcy is next. Stay well and look after each other.